I don't think this is a finite game. I don't think there is a winner. I think this is the classic Simon Sinek infinite game. I think the players are going to play until they run out of resources and they can no longer play the game. And I think we're going to win, right? I think it opens up a creator ecosystem. What I hope that it breaks up is all these kind of Web 2.0 massive companies controlling everything, and we can get a more surrounded marketplace.
All that and more on today's Mixture of Experts. I'm Tim Huang, and welcome to Mixture of Experts. Each week, MOE brings together a panel of the smartest and most charming thinkers in technology to distill down what's important in artificial intelligence. Joining us today are three incredible panelists. We've got Chris Hay, distinguished engineer, Lauren McHugh Olende, Program Director, AI Open Innovation, and Volkmar Ulig, VP Core AI and Watson X AI. So this is our Thanksgiving episode, and we're going to change up the format a little bit. Rather than ticking through the news of the moment, we're going to take a step back and have a focused discussion about the bigger picture. But as always, we've got the headlines with Eileen.
Hi, everyone. I'm Eileen McConnon, a tech news writer for IBM Think. As always, I'm here to cover your top AI news of the week. But instead of running through a bunch of headlines today, we're actually going to focus on one, the big news of the week, Anthropic's new Claude 4.5 Opus model, which just dropped. And to do this, I'm joined by our expert, Mihai Crivetti, distinguished engineer for agentic AI.
When I heard it was about the latest model from Claude, I couldn't resist. So happy to be here.
What would you say is the most important thing that users need to know about Anthropic's new Claude 4.5 Opus?
I think it's just how efficient it is with its tokens. It's 50% more efficient than Claude Opus 4.1. So even though it's a reasoning model, even though it can be a fairly expensive model, it's cheaper, but it also consumes 50% fewer tokens when reasoning. So it's one of the most efficient models out there. So don't be afraid to use it. Give it a try. I think the best way to use it is through Claude code and leveraging those capabilities, and it really performs very well for how token efficient it is.
Mihai, what are some of your initial reactions to the model after playing with it?
Yeah, it's all kind of fresh because I think it all happened like 21 hours ago. So this is all fairly new. But I've already been using it. I've been using it with both, the desktop application and with Claude Code. And I can say this is by far the best model for coding, and the bar has already been set quite high. As you know, Google has released Gemini Free Pro quite recently, and I think 2-3 days ago, OpenAI released GPT 5.1 Pro, which has great reasoning capabilities, but also they've released GPT 5.1 Codex Max, which makes their Codex, I would say, agentic platform really, really good. I suspect, at least from my initial testing, that it was on par or even better than Claude Code with the previous 4.1 models, or Opus 4.1 or 4.5 Sonnet. But now with Opus 4.5, I believe Anthropic has regained the lead in terms of the best model for coding. Still doing some initial testing on it, but it's performing really well.
That's super interesting. And you mentioned this comes, shortly after the release of Gemini 3, and we've had some other big models. But, what do you make of the timing of Anthropic's release? Obviously, it's been a busy fall for big releases of coding agents.
This can be a coincidence. I'm wondering if these vendors just have these models ready to go. They just might not have the best, I would say, price performance, or they're waiting for another announcement from their competitors before they put them out to market. Because the timing was really, really good. I mean, within the span of 3 days, we got, three world-leading models all for code, all outperforming each other in various benchmarks, which is, quite interesting.
And are there, you mentioned, three strong performing new agents, being released in quick succession. Is there any aspect of the Claude 4.5 Opus that is different, or that, obviously it sounds like slightly superior performance, but, what makes this release different, if it is, from your perspective?
I think it's the pricing as well. They're able to reach much better price performance or number of tokens used than the previous 4.1 Opus. I was at some point where I was just using 4.1 Opus for the planning or the more complex tasks, and using 4.5 Sonnet or the previous Sonnet models for the actual work, because they have, a very large context window. They were cheaper, they were faster. I think they've been making some optimizations in terms of things like pricing and performance as well for Opus 4.5. And it feels you get a bit more bang for your buck than the previous versions of, for that one Opus.
And can you talk a little bit more about how, you know, they've achieved that those lower pricing? You know, are there sort of innovations in how they're approaching things that have helped them to do that?
I'm not sure it's necessarily to do with innovation. Maybe it just has to do with more availability of the hardware. You know, they've recently announced some very, very strong partnerships with both Microsoft Azure and with Google to use, you know, more GPUs, more TPUs. I think part of it just has to do with having more availability of the infrastructure and being able to reach a bit further and say, hey, we're putting some of our best models out there as the default. I was actually quite surprised and maybe even shocked that when I've opened up Cloud Code, it recommended 4.5 Opus as the default, which is somewhat unusual. It might say something like, hey, we're going to use 4.1 or we're going to use 4.5 for thinking, and then we're going to transition into 4.1. But outright, I've launched a new version of Cloud Code and it used 4.5 Opus as the default.
And I guess it's hard to predict, but how long does Anthropic have the lead? You know, we've had, is it 48 hours? Will we have something new by next week? Or, you know, does this set itself apart such that you'll be using it yourself at least as your top choice for at least the coming weeks?
I think the way I see it, and I'm using all three models. I'm using Gemini for a lot of my deep research, my advisory. I'm using Cloud Code with Opus for writing code or for, you know, writing test cases. And I'm using Codex with GPT for reviews or for anything else after. So I'm actually using all three. But I would say by number of tokens, it's still the Anthropic models that I'm using the most tokens with. They're writing the vast majority of the code for me because they perform the best for this particular use case. I don't see it necessarily as a situation where if I had a different use case, I would still use the models from Anthropic. If it was, you know, summarization or content generation or creative thinking or creative writing, maybe I would lean more towards GPT-5.1 Pro. But at least for in the area of code, it could also be a combination with what they put in the Cloud Code tooling. It still seems to outperform Codex, or at least for my use cases or from my personal experience.
Do you think for that specific area of coding, does this sort of have enterprise application or usefulness? Or, you know, do you think that's part of the play in trying to bring the cost down to make it sort of more enterprise friendly? Or, yeah, how do you see that?
Yeah, I think the strategy of making this available through the various hyperscalers at, I would say, at a reasonable cost is going to help with enterprise deployments, because many of the enterprises are never going to consume the models directly from the provider. So, you know, you're not going to go off and consume this on, if you're using models from OpenAI, you're going to consume them likely on Azure from Microsoft, not necessarily directly from ChatGPT. Same thing goes with Cloud. You're going to consume it through maybe AWS Bedrock, but there has been somewhat of a limiting choice. For enterprises with its availability through Microsoft Azure, for example, this has really opened it up to enterprise customers and consumers.
Is there anything else about the model, that's worth talking about that we haven't covered yet that sort of strikes you as interesting?
Yeah, I think clearly they've optimized it for agents, they've optimized it for computer use, they've optimized it for coding. But I like the fact they've also optimized it for things like building PowerPoint slides, which was maybe at something that, you know, even Microsoft was looking at these models for using Office 365 or, you know, PowerPoint generation, slide generation. So they're not looking just at software development use cases. They're now starting to tackle a lot of other enterprise use cases, you know, being the best model for generating a PowerPoint slide, of generating a Word document, of generating and working with, you know, XML or working with the schema required to build those documents. So I'm pleased and happy to see that models are being optimized for these enterprise use cases.
I'd be happy to have a model to do my PowerPoint slides as well.
Yeah, 100%.
To optimize. Thank you, Mihai, so much for joining our conversation. And now we're going to return to our special Thanksgiving episode. Happy holidays, everybody.
Thanksgiving, I think, is like a really good time to be talking about agents because, of course, agents have been very much hyped in 2025, but agentic commerce has been one of the things in agents that people have been excited about. And, you know, this week is going to feature Thanksgiving, but also importantly, Black Friday, which is one of the biggest shopping moments of the year. And so I guess maybe, Chris, I'll kick it to you first. You know, do you think this week is going to be a breakout moment for agents and agentic commerce? You know, why or why not?
No, I don't think it will be. I think we're probably another year away from that. Why not is that I think all of the ingredients are getting in place. So if you think about what OpenAI's done, they're now bringing on board the ability to shop in their channel for commerce products. And they partnered with, Shopify, et cetera. But there's so many commerce retailers that they've not onboarded yet. So I think that's really early, and it is US only at the moment. And then Google has released their agent commerce protocol. And again, that's really early at the moment. So I think and agentic browsers haven't quite taken off yet. So I just think we're about a year away from that. Now, where I do think it's going to become relevant is utilizing web search and deep researchers from within ChatGPT to find the products that you want. That is going to be big, and that is disrupting retailers. But I don't see a massive effect on Black Friday this year.
What's sort of interesting, and I'd love to kind of parse that out a little bit more, is I guess, Chris, you've listed like a couple key components, right? It's almost like the agentic browser is not quite there. The partnerships are not right there from a business standpoint. I guess, Lauren, do you kind of agree with this assessment? Do you think, like, you know, this week is going to be big for agentic commerce? I guess, you know, Chris is almost saying, like, I guess there is some insofar as people are using it to find products, but it's not obviously what we were promised in the exciting early days of 2025.
Yeah, my feeling is it's also not going to be so different from last year. So the protocols that Chris talked about will help in automating the actual checkout. Once you're using ChatGPT and you find the thing you want, you can automate the checkout. But I'm not sure that was really ever the biggest problem. You know, I didn't have a big problem putting in my credit card manually once I get to the link.
They spent a lot of time making it easy to spend money on the internet.
I mean, we've had automated checkout for a while. It was very hacky. You know, that's why it's hard to get concert tickets, is because it is possible to build browser automation to buy things automatically. So I don't see a big revolution coming from the simple act of being able to check it out once you're in the AI application. And I do think, too, that even the product research capabilities are a bit underwhelming. You know, when you know you're looking for something specific, like size dimensions or a style or something, it's not always easy to find that just through the kind of interface that we have now. And I think a lot more work could be done on both training AI models on e-commerce relevant information. So, you know, what are the input-output pairs of input, this was the customer intention, output, this is what they ultimately selected, and, you know, allow the AI model to build those pattern recognition of, okay, you know, that intention really meant this size of things or this configuration. So I think there's definitely work that could be done on that front of having the models themselves better, working better for e-commerce. And then I think there's also, you know, when you fit those models into a agentic pattern, how do you, you know, prompt it? How do you build in the steps of that process? So, you know, like first by start by identifying the retailers you want to look in, then, you know, get the information you need on their products, then compare them. Like that's a whole flow that using a general purpose chatbot or, you know, ChatGPT or whatever, pick your system, it's not made specifically for that. So I think if we had more workflows that were built specifically for that, the performance of those could go, you know, through the roof. That, you know, when you have an intention, you can get a specific link to that product right away. So I think that's really where I'd like to see more improvements.
Yeah, definitely. Volkmar, I'd love to bring you in because I think your angle of this is really interesting. When we talk about agents, obviously, we tend to talk about like higher up in the stack, right? It's like the application's not quite there. Even like the business partnerships are not quite there to get this to work. Is there a hardware limiter to the world of agents really taking off, particularly in commerce, but I guess otherwise, or is this not like almost not even in the picture?
So I would take a completely different stand, right? I think it is actually the year of agents. And the reason is very simple. If you look at Black Friday, 15 to 20% of the stuff gets returned, right? And so I think the agents are not the consumer-facing agents, but the agents are actually the back end. And I think this is where the true adoption happens, where stuff, you know, people are returning. It's the same after Christmas. Like, you know, it's like statistics, like it's unclear. It's somewhere between 15 and 25%. It depends on the product category. So if you look at Amazon today already, you know, if you want to return something, it used to be like, you know, they click five buttons and then they're like, okay, good, ship it back, or no, we reject it and you had to make a phone call. Now that's all done through agentic workloads. And so I think from the big retailers, and it's probably not, I mean, Shopify at some point will offer it as well, but the big retailers are already in that motion of actually optimizing that back-end flow. I do not know what they are doing when the product hits, you know, their shipping center. If they have agentic workloads there, I'm sure they do. But that first customer touch point, effectively doing like the return, I think that's where the majority of the labor is on their side, because the front end is very optimized. So we just don't see it as a consumer, but we see it indirectly because actually a return is easier.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is kind of a pattern I did want to talk about. I mean, just zooming out from e-commerce, right? Or like, you know, buying stuff online is, I think it's almost easy as like a consumer to be like, agents are the dog that didn't bark in 2025. Because yeah, most of the people I know are not using agents every single day for all sorts of things. But it does seem like on the back end, on the enterprise, there is a lot of agent activity. And so it's sort of interesting, is that kind of like the public face and public experience of agents is like very underwhelming. Whereas, you know, Volkmar, there's like stuff running under the hood for like returns, which are like very much agentified. And so we have this kind of split screen that's happening in agents that might actually fool us about just how far this thing is going.
And I think that, I mean, if you look at programming an agent, it's pretty complicated, you know, what you need to do. And you need a core set into doing the right thing. And so I think the consumer will always consume agents indirectly through products. And so it's not like, you know, I mean, we have like these apps on the phone that I can automate stuff. I don't know. I have one automation on my iPhone, which is like, when I'm driving close to our community, open the gate. Okay, that's the only automation I have out of all the automations I could build. And so humans typically, like, you know, they want to have a packaged product which just solves the problem. And I think that's the beauty of what ChatGPT did, is giving you that one line everybody knows how to use from Google over 20 years. And it's really easy to consume. And now they are building, similar to Google, all these capabilities in. So I think that's how we will, as a human, we will consume agents. But then in the enterprise, no, you take your business process, and where every place you have a human, you can actually try to put an agent. And so I think we will see adoption indirectly, but not directly. Now, is it the year of the agents? I think we are still in the POC phase in some companies. And so in that sense, I just want to have a contrarian opinion. I think to a certain extent, it is probably the year of the agent POCs. Let's call it this way.
Okay, yeah. Pilot agents.
Yeah, the pilot agents, yes.
Yeah, correct. Chris, go.
Yeah, no, it's the year of the agents. I don't, you know, I disagree with Volkmar. It's the year of the agents. So yeah, like,
you don't need to caveat that, you say, yeah.
It just is, right? I mean, we need to think about this for a second, right? So if we look at what has happened with ChatGPT, right? And we'll start from there and then move outwards. But integrated both in ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, you've got web search capabilities, which is tool calling. You've now got the model catalog, so you can hook up things like your Jira, and pretty much anybody who's got a service on the internet, you can hook up as a connector now. And that is basically tool calling. Everybody's offering deep researcher, which is agent behaviors. And then probably the biggest star of them all is going to be the coding agents, right? That's just went crazy, especially things like Claude Code, if you think about things like Lovable, et cetera. Everybody, you know, Codex, everybody's using coding agents to get their work done. And the biggest thing that's made the difference there is given access to tools. So I think agents are here. And as I said at the beginning of the year, the super agent, is that the fact is that with planning and reasoning, these agents have become really, really capable. So I think it can still feel POC-like because everything's maybe not agent in the way that you think. But we are all pretty much using agents every day. We're just not thinking about them in that way.
Yeah, and I guess they're not weaved together in kind of like the cohesive experience that we've been promised, right? Like, Chris, you began by saying like, well, it's not like Black Friday, like agent commerce is really going to be happening everywhere because all these pieces are still missing. They're there, but they just haven't been kind of orchestrated in a certain sense. Lauren, I always joke, you know, the agentic consumer demo is always like, you need to book a trip. And he's like, push the button and the trip is booked. And I guess kind of what Volkmar is saying is like, that isn't happening, might take a really long time to happen. Do you think it eventually will? Like, will we get to the much more kind of like consumer-y agentic experience, right? That like, I think that is the source of all these like splashy videos and startups that people are working on. Or is that Volkmar, what I heard you saying is almost a little bit like the future may not actually look a whole lot like that just because of all the things you need to package. And so like all the agents might always be kind of a little bit in the background, but I'm curious about kind of like how far to the consumer you think the agent experience will look like.
Yeah, I think the trajectory of just LLMs standalone is a really interesting one to compare this to. So LLMs, we had, you know, 2017, the Transformers paper. 2018 was the year that we got BERT and was the year that we got GPT-1. And then 2022 was when we got those things available to the end consumer in a very, very easy way, like in the form of a web app or a mobile app. So I feel like where we are with agents is maybe that 2018, like, you know, not purely research paper level, but still not 2022 in the hands of every single person. You know, we have like our GPT-1 BERT kind of demos and things to look at. And then I think the big question is, will it take 4 years to get into the hands of everyone like it did with LLMs? You know, there's definitely reason to think that across the board, these timelines are accelerating. So maybe it could be less than 4 years. We have way more attention and investment in this technology than we did with, you know, there was just low awareness amongst the, you know, community of investors and people who are going to nudge this along back in 2018 of LLMs. So could it be faster because of that, or could it be longer because maybe it's a lot going to turn out to be a lot more complicated than getting LLMs into production and into everyone's hands? So,
yeah, it's like I do like the idea that's like background hype on AI makes all downstream AI things happen faster because everybody's paying attention to it now. And I guess, Lauren, what I think this is actually one thing I did want to ask you a little bit about is that like a big part of this acceleration is whether or not it's easy for people to develop agentic platforms, tools, applications. And do you want to give just kind of a flavor of the state of the developer ecosystem right now? Because I feel like that's a critical thing. I mean, I think Volkmar said a moment ago, right? Like getting these to work still takes a lot of work, right? And so I feel like that in some ways limits our progress just because like the number of organizations and people who can actually do this is like small. And so one way you increase progress is you just make it easier for people to develop for it. And so interested in how you see the developer ecosystem around this evolving.
I think it's a really, really fun time to be a developer if you want to try and you want to experiment. And you can do that no code. There's things like Langflow it's visual to build an agent and drag and drop. That's super cool. That helps you not waste a lot of time coding something that ultimately, you know, the data is just not there, the LLM just doesn't understand, all the way to like the pro code. There's LangChain, LangGraph, CrewAI, AutoGen, Semantic Kernel. Your choice of things. And some are a bit more easier and abstracted to use. Some give you full control if you want it. So I think if you want to try, you have all of the tools to do that. That should never be the problem. I think if you want to actually deploy that and take it out of, you know, a very tightly controlled environment with a very, you know, precisely specified use case, which is probably book a trip, like you said. If you want to ever, you know, expand beyond that, actually have it hosted somewhere, somewhere where you could invite your friends to try it, that's where it immediately gets very complicated and there's far fewer just obvious options of what you're going to use. You know, you might have to, I mean, right now, it would probably make sense to, you want to deploy an agent and have it hosted somewhere. You have to figure out where to host the agent logic itself, which is not really LLM type workloads, and then a separate environment to host the actual inference and then patch those two things together. So it's really not ideal. So I think, you know, actually scaling up, sharing, hosting what you build is the hard part.
So I think it's also one of the inhibitors, right? So if you look at it right now, we don't have this packaged all happy solution. And it's the entry barrier. We are not at the Shopify level, right? Where the, you know, a mom and pop shop can say, hey, I want to have an agent and it should, you know, deal with something. You know, and I think the there are some projects we have in IBM where we take the flows and the business description, and we're converting that straight up from English into a lang flow. And so that transformation, when we are at the point that you can actually use English to describe what problem you want to automate and not know anything about programming, I think then you get it to the masses. And then you can do it on a cell phone, right? It's like, hey, when I come home, I want the lights to be on, and not like, you know, build automation, you know, when someone's like, it's like the interface is just like really, it's a baby programmer interface for people who can program, and that's why nobody uses it, right? But I mean, there's a logic, and I can describe that logic in English. So now you need to be very explicit, but I think the models can already fill in the gaps. They are smart enough for that. If we can get to a point similar to, you know, right now we are doing English to code. If we can get English to agent, then we are at a point that it's mass consumable. And right now the interfaces are still, it's still built for programmers. It's not built for consumers.
Yeah, that's right. And I feel like that vision almost short circuits it, which is like, well, do you need a developer ecosystem, right, for a whole set of applications? Which I think is pretty interesting.
I think it's pretty obvious that, you know, someone, like I always use Shopify, because Shopify was this, you know, if you look in the 2000s, it was like, oh my God, you can run a web server on the internet. That's amazing, right? So I can build a $1 billion business. And then Shopify came along and just effectively democratized this. We are not yet at the point, it's still high tech, it's not democratized. But it's just a question of time that someone wraps it and says, okay, you know, I make it really easy. And that easiness, once you have that and the complexity goes down by a factor of 10 or 100, then you know, everybody will use it, because otherwise you die. And I think there will be an integration in already these type of commerce applications. And so the moment someone figures this out well, it will just be wildfire. But I think that pivotal moment hasn't happened. The Shopify moment for agents hasn't happened.
Yeah, there's almost a tension between these kind of two pathways, it feels like, where one of them is Volkmar, what you're talking about, which is like language to agent. If we got that really good and really powerful, then you almost don't need to build a lot of the kind of like deployment infrastructure, I guess, in some ways that like Lauren, you're talking about, right? Which is, oh, well, we've got this like prototype we're building, and then now it's got to be on some kind of rails for us to like make it more available. There's kind of a vision for, I guess, Volkmar, what you're talking about, which is like the consumer just simply types in what they want and then it happens, basically. I guess, Chris, maybe to bring you into the conversation, I think going to kind of what Lauren is saying about like, okay, right now there's lots of ways of kind of like prototyping an agent. But the minute you want to do anything more complicated or to scale it, there's just this like gap in the space. Do you have a sense of kind of like what's necessary to sort of mature that right now? Is like, we're still waiting on the companies and platforms that are going to make that happen.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it is to take things to your point from POC and MVP to scale is a hard problem because, you know, consumers do crazy things, right? So you start to have to say, well, am I putting the LLM right in front of the consumer? And if you are at that point, then you need to guardrail it. And that could be things like guard models. It could be running, you know, deterministic flows in conjunction with the AI to keep it on track. To Volkmar's point about text to plans, if you look at something like Claude Code, if you look at something like Cursor, Windsurf, etc., almost all of these things have a built-in planner. And so when you ask a question, the first thing that happens is it goes to the planning module for anything complex, and then the model is kept to the plan. And you see that, you know, we talked about Manus early in the year, same sort of thing, right? You ask a task, it goes to the planning module, the planning agent kicks in, creates the plan, and then the agents execute to the plan. And there's a good reason that exists, which is if you give an LLM an agent a big list of tools, who knows what tool it's going to pick, right? And my favorite one at the moment for this is the Kimi K2 model, right? I love the Kimi K2 model. It can call 200, 300 tools. It has a long sequential range of tool call, and it can do a mass amount of tools. But you know what it is? You give it a tool, it's going to call it, baby. You know what it is? It's like every tool that it's got is like, I will do it this way, I will do it that way. It goes off the rails. It's in a phenomenal model. But it goes off the rails because it can't keep itself on track. And then even when you're executing to the plan, quite often the models will either use its own memory or it will not even bother updating the progress. So it will be like, oh, no, I know the answer to this. And then just answer it, right? As opposed to, no, I need you to use the tool, right? Your information that you've got isn't enough. I need you to use a tool. And it's like, no, I know this. And then
I got this one. Gives
it, yeah, exactly. And it's like, yeah, don't got it. I do. And even if it does that, once it's done the task, when you're following a plan, you want to go executed, step executed. And again, the model, if you're not deterministic and if you leave the model on its own, it will skip steps in the plan or not even update it, right? So actually, to that point about frameworks, when you want to start to get to production, that's where those sort of frameworks become really important in place. But the reality is that there is not a lot of you're then back to a developer mindset to be able to put those frameworks in place to deploy. They're not out of the box. So I think when we see that being a mass thing, those frameworks are either just going to be part of the platform and ecosystem you deploy your code onto it, or that's going to be solved at the model level.
So I guess in the last few minutes, I want to talk a little bit about sort of, we've been talking about technically what needs to happen for 2026, I guess, to be the real year of the agent. I'm interested a little bit in sort of like winners and losers and kind of platforms here, right? I guess the question is like, are the winners in agent land from a platform standpoint going to be the winners in AI in general, right? Like, is it going to be, you know, OpenAI and Anthropic that end up dominating the kind of like agentic ecosystem? Will it be, you know, some of the maybe the cloud players that really end up doing this? I don't know if anyone here has any strong priors on like who's well positioned to kind of really be the major platform for this space.
I think there are two questions to answer. So one is, what model or what model zoo do I need to use to actually get good results? And what Chris just said was, you know, that these things go off the rails. And so you need to kind of babysit them into giving you the right answer. I had a case where I tried to program something and had an API call, and the API call didn't work. And so in the end, the model just decided, it's like, oh, I just stub it. And, you know, I just call my own function and it's like, look, I'm done. It works, right? And it didn't do anything anymore. So it's like, the solution is don't do anything and then I'm good. And it's like, success, congratulations. So I think there's the whole, like, how do we manage the model? And that's a hard problem in itself, right? Building a model, like right now we are, the state of the world is you need these frontier models because otherwise the reasoning capabilities are not prevalent enough. Now, I think that probably next year we will see people just building like planning models. Like, you just focus on one thing, get the planning right, and then curse the models underneath to execute the plan and not go off the track. And right now, I don't think we have done that. And so I think the frontier models are really the only place where it can go right now. But of course, with humongous cost associated to it. So we will see like the smaller models being specialized for planning. I think the second question is, how you execute this and where you execute this. And I think that's a really good question. My belief is, and this is where I'm also taking our product, is AI is everywhere. There is no place where AI is not, right? So the idea that we are like, oh, we're just putting a bunch of, you know, H100s or H200s in a data center, and that's where all the AI will happen, that's just not true. Like, we will see pervasive application. It will happen on your cell phone, it will happen in a data center. And so the real trick here is who can make those agents cost effective. Because in the end, right now, the work is done, right? In Portugal, in business scenarios, the work is done by labor. Like, there is a person who is currently doing it by hand. And what we are hoping for is that the agents, A, replace the people who do it by hand so that the people who are doing things by hand can do better things. And then the other one is we want to have agents in the hands where right now the work doesn't get done at all. Right? Or poorly. So we want to get more choices. And so that one is really now a cost optimization problem. And so I think there's an industry at the bottom of like, we need to efficiently run that capacity, that infrastructure, so that we bring down the cost of these agents, you know, by 10 or 100x. And if we hit that, then it will be pervasive. Right now, we are using it primarily for like high value tasks, which are incredibly labor intensive, right? Or which are very, very controlled. So I can actually say, I have, you know, thousands of people doing this, but I can put an agent behind it because it's a confined enough problem space that I can supervise and watch it. And so the moment these things get more powerful and we bring the cost down, I think then it will be a more pervasive application.
Yeah, that's right. I like seeing that kind of like almost like the market sort of dividing between sort of maybe like the existing frontier AI model companies going more agentic. And like that's kind of one part of the market. And then there's a whole kind of like cost efficiency universe that kind of emerges. And they also, like, you know, the frontier model companies might also get into that, but it's also like maybe looks like a very different kind of market, a very different kind of ecosystem. Lauren, curious about how you divide up the future agentic market. Is it, you know, one model to rule them all? You know, is it just kind of curious, there's many ways this could play out. And I'm sort of interested in how you forecast here.
Yeah, I think whoever can make something repeatable will win, because it really feels like this moment of agents right now is like traditional AI 10 years ago, where it was really cool that you could build an AI model to do anything, but you had to do that from scratch. So you wanted it to predict education outcomes. You had to find the data, train the model just for that, refine it, and then package it up and use it. And then if you wanted it to do something else, you had to start over. It was a whole end-to-end process every time. And that's kind of what agent building is right now. And it's even more painful because it's not just code-based, it's language-based. So much of that rebuilding is like prompting it and figuring out how to nudge it in certain directions and get it to use tools sometimes and not other times and use the tools in better ways. So I feel like the breakthrough with traditional AI was foundation models. We then trained bigger, better models because we could, we had more data, we had more compute. And then that one model could do different things because it knew a little bit of everything. I think if we similarly had some concept of foundation agents, it could work similar. And then, you know, kind of reduce that friction of having to build from scratch every single time.
Yeah, for sure. And you think the winners that are best positioned, I guess there would be the existing leaders, right? Like, I guess they take their model, polish it off, and then it's the foundation agentic, you know, model, basically.
And I don't even think it would be model at this point. It would be orchestration of multiple models plus other, you know, constraints put on that. I really don't know. I don't know if it would be the existing leaders, or is it going to be some dark horse that initially builds one agent to do one specific thing, but then takes the pieces of that, you know, whatever percent of the code, and uses that to do a second thing and then a third thing. And then eventually, because that was kind of the AWS story, right, is they were building for themselves to do something specific initially, but then a lot of that cloud infrastructure could be used for other things beyond that. So I think there is a scenario where that happens, where someone just commits to a use case and initially, you know, they're kind of looked down upon because they're using AI to just do one thing, but do it well. But then they realize what the pattern is to expand to other things and eventually build something that's more repeatable and more of a platform.
Yeah, that's very rich. I never really thought about that as basically like, what's the specific agentic problem that if you solve unlocks the largest number of subsequent agentic problems? And it's kind of interesting to think about, like, is that the travel planning one? Like, what is that use case? So, Chris, do you want to give us a final thought here before we close up?
I don't think this is a finite game. I don't think there is a winner. I think this is the classic Simon Sinek infinite game. I think the players are going to play until they run out of resources and they can no longer play the game. And I think that's that's what's going to happen, right? So I think a lot of the technology and the techniques is known. I think it's well known across the world, and the limiting factor is resource. But in an agentic world, the models need to get smaller and smarter, and they need, and in the future, be able to fit on a chip, right? And therefore, I just don't think there is a winner in this scenario. So who do I think is going to win? I think we're going to win, right? I think it opens up a creator ecosystem. What I hope that it breaks up is all these kind of Web 2.0 massive companies controlling everything, and we can get a more surrounded marketplace. That's what I believe in. And the biggest thing, if I think about this, is what I think was going to happen for 26 and 27 is, you remember the Rick Rubin episode where I was frantically Googling who Rick Rubin was so and I could give an intelligent answer to your question, Tim. I'm obsessed with Rick Rubin at the moment, because actually I think composition is where we're going. I think 26 and 27 is going to be about marketplace, but I think it's going to be about being producers. And you're going to say, okay, I've got this model over here, and I've got my piece of data, and I've got my brand, and my style, and I've got these five tools, and then I'm going to combine them together into my ecosystem, and I'm going to create something new and beautiful, and therefore, and that's going to be my product. And so I hope that's what happens, is that it's not this one model or whatever is the winner. That's a depressing future. What I'm hoping is this vibrant, amazing ecosystem and marketplace where everybody's got a chance to use AI to improve their lives, personalize it to them, and create their own companies, products, and data without the limitations that we have today. So we're going to be the winners. But I think these model providers, they're going to come and go, right? And we saw that this year. Who was Moonshot and Kimmy, right? ask that question 6 months ago, right? And then if we go back last year, who was DeepSeek, right? Same sort of thing. And new model providers are going to come in. And remember when we were super excited about Manus? Again, I expect them to come back at some point. Just people are going to come in and out, and it's fine and it's okay. But who knows for the future? But it's going to be fun.
Nice. Well, on that hopeful note, I'm going to let you all get to your impending holidays. Volkmar, Lauren, Chris, thanks for joining us. And thanks to you listeners for joining us. If you enjoyed what you heard, you can get us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and podcast platforms everywhere. And we'll see you next week on Mixture of Experts.